Leo had never been very good with heights. It was strange that it was he and not his sister who was up here now. He'd always felt safer with his feet on terra firma. From his vantage point, he could see down into the walled garden of the old manor house that lay adjacent to the woods. The orchard was still there. He thought back to that afternoon when long ago Lady Hillier had caught them, red-handed, stealing ripe cherries from a tree. "Aren't you the doctor's twins?" She'd had a weather-beaten, florid complexion, and her grey hair had flown behind her like a witch's in flight. Her voice was barking and censorious. He could still feel the heat of shame in his cheeks as his father came to collect them. "Leo, do we need anything from the van?" He looked down nervously. Only soya milk, I think." "Okay." Linda waved her hand without looking up and moved away from the clearing. The three of them had set up camp 4 days ago, ready to resist the contractors should the appeal against the new link road be lost. A decision was due the next day. Leo felt a pain in his solar plexus and a heaviness in his heart. He didn't want to think about it. The sky was turning steel grey. He spread the tarpaulin he used as a roof and tied it to three small branches above his head. These trees were his spiritual heritage, his and Diana's childhood. In the long summer afternoons, they'd run out of the school playground, bowled carelessly down the lane, and on reaching the edge of the wood, they would quieten down in a reverential trance, as though they were entering a sacred grove. The fairies and tree spirits here had a physical, visceral reality for the children. Leo would go first to his favourite elm, stand very still with his ear to the bark, and listen to it. Then he would encircle its trunk with his small arms and try in vain to reach all the way around so that his hands would meet. Diana, by contrast, would start to climb the trees immediately with a rhythmic compulsion. She was eager, fearless, and graceful. They had been born at the time of the midwinter solstice. Their mother had dreamed secretly of calling them Artemis and Apollo. She settled for Diana, the Roman counterpart of the athletic Greek goddess who'd ruled supreme over woods, mountains, and the moon. By a quirk of fate, although they were twins, they had been born under different signs of the zodiac. Diana arrived during the last minutes of Sagittarius, the archer, the fiery huntress, always restless and searching. Leo was a pantheistic Capricorn, experiencing nature in an earthy, mystical way. He was the green man, the heath man or heathen, the defender of trees. They inspired and complemented one another. It had been Diana's idea to build a tree house in the garden for their 9th birthday. Their father had helped them. On its completion, the twins celebrated with a tin of cold baked beans stolen from the larder and a bottle of fizzy orange. Diana immediately started jumping out of the treehouse. After the fifth time, delirious and dizzy with laughter, she was violently sick. Leo stayed in the safety of the treehouse, too scared to jump out, and nervously eyeing the bed of nettles which kept missing Diana's legs by an inch. Eventually, to her vociferous cheers, he found his nerve and jumped, with his eyes shut tight. The next problem was how to descend by way of the branches. If he looked down, he froze, his limbs not responding to his brain's instructions in reverse. "Let's give the branches a name, Leo, like people. We'll call the first one King Arthur. He's under your right foot. Arthur's trusty and strong. He won't let you down, I promise. Now, come down with your left foot till you find Lancelot. There's a really good flat bit on him. Reach out for Queen Guinevere, Leo. Grab her with your right hand." And thus, with his sister's guidance, he mastered an undignified and cautious descent. Their parents would let them stay up there late during the holidays. They'd wriggle into two old quilted sleeping bags before gazing up at the evening sky, watching it transform into night. Sometimes Leo could see Diana's face in the moon. It comforted him to know that she would be forever looking down on him from above. She told him made-up stories about Pendragon and the Knights of the Round Table, or Robin Hood and Little John. The following year, when they were 10, they had to move to the city. Roads replaced woods, and cars replaced trees. Spider's voice interrupted his daydream. Grab up, Leo. Time to go down for supper. He untied his safety rope, took a deep breath, and cautiously began the 30-foot descent. The branches were still wet from an earlier shower. He found Arthur beneath his right foot and gripped Guinevere tightly with his left hand. He soon found his rhythm and eventually jumped down from Merlin onto the leafy ground. They had just finished eating when suddenly he heard a spluttering, clattering sound. He looked down to see the head of a golden retriever, licking, sniffing and chasing his tin plate around in small circles on the ground, its tail wagging in ecstasy at this unexpected find. Ptolemy! Heel! I do apologise. I hadn't realised it was so late. Way past your mealtime, poor Tolly. We usually eat while the archers is on. He's a beautiful dog, said Linda. Lady Hillier put Ptolemy on the lead and shoved her hands firmly into the pockets of her wax jacket. Yes, he's a good boy. It seemed as though she was hovering, not quite wanting to leave and yet unsure of the etiquette if she stayed. Would you like to sit down? Leo stood and offered her a tree stump. No, really, shan't stop. She spoke in punctuated bursts, like a telegram. Suppose you're here about this damned road business. We'll all know by this time tomorrow. I shall sell up and leave, of course. Family's been here for generations. Just mind you don't leave a trail of litter. And look here. First thing in the morning, one of you boys come up to the house, and you can rig up a hose pipe to reach down here. Don't know how you've been managing up to now. Yeah, I'll say good night, then. It was nearly too dark to see. They took it in turns to have two of them sleeping by the fire and one to stay awake in their lookout post high in the trees, in case the contractors should come very early in the morning and take them by surprise. Leo bid his friends good night. He reached for Merlin and pulled himself up, making a steady and prayerful ascent. He'd improvised a seat for himself at the top, made from an old kitchen unit. He secured his safety rope around his waist, shuffled precariously into his damp sleeping bag, and leaned back into the crook of a huge, benevolent branch, which he called Friar Tuck. The air felt cool and cleansing, and the nearly full moon was rising. He liked the dark. It helped mask his fear of heights. He felt his twin's laughter echoing across the woods, and looked up to see her face in the moon. "I'm saving the woods for you." Good night, Diana. The next morning, at 8:30, he knocked diffidently at the kitchen door of the manor house. His back was stiff from his nocturnal sojourn in the treehouse, and he was feeling jaded and tired. On the third rap, he heard a bolt being shot and saw Ptolemy jumping up at the glass. Down! The familiar bark of her ladyship's gruff voice was not unlike the dog's. This amusing thought helped Leo relax a little. Come in. Tolly's a big softy. He won't hurt you. He stepped inside. The kitchen smelt of agar and lapsang souchong. You'll have a cup of tea. Lady Hillier looked as though it was she who'd spent the night up a tree. Her hair was ill-kempt and her quilted body warmer was stained and covered with dog hairs. Linda was right. It was the aristocracy who'd invented grunge. Yes, thank you. Now, sit down here. Do know your face, don't I? Can't for the life of me think where from. I'm Leo Barnes. My father is Dr. Barnes. We lived in the village years ago. I grew up here. The light of recognition dawned in her face. Good grief, yes. Oh, how extraordinary. Never without that sister of yours. What was her name now? Leo braced himself. Diana. His voice sounded tight and strained. Of course, that's it. Oh, lovely girl. Used to come up here to ride Martin's pony. What's she doing now? University? Married? Got a social conscience like you, I bet. She's dead. His words hung in the air. A fleeting grimace of pain shot across her lined face. Oh, my God. I'm so terribly sorry. She turned away, embarrassed suddenly, and attended to the tea-making. A minute passed before she turned to look at him again. What happened, Leo? He heaved a deep sigh. The familiar heaviness inside him urged caution. He never spoke about this, even to his closest friends. He knew it was misguided, but it felt like betraying Diana. She came and sat beside him, her weather-beaten hand taking his in a rough tenderness. We left the village because my father got a new job in a practice in the inner city. Social conscience too, I guess, he said, almost as an aside. Diana and I were devastated. We didn't know what had hit us. We felt like animals that had suddenly been put in a cage. One day, soon after we'd moved, I was in my parents' bedroom. Diana was playing on the front path. For no obvious reason, she looked up at me quickly. And then she ran out into the road as though she was trying to escape from something. I saw it all. The lorry driver was in shock. It was so quick. I couldn't save her. He bowed his head, unable to say more. Tears welled up in his eyes and swam over his cheeks. He was aware of a sobbing sound, and his stomach seemed to be heaving and churning in waves as though trying to expel a great weight. Ptolemy sauntered over from his basket, and with the perfect intuition and trust peculiar to animals, he put his chin on Leo's lap and looked up at him with creased brows and soulful eyes. Leo reached down and clasped the soft, warm neck. His crying became less urgent, and slowly he sat upright again, breathing deeply until he felt calmer. Lady Hillier reached into her pocket, producing an old and very dirty handkerchief. He blew his nose obediently. "You know, the first time I saw you twins, I thought you were gypsy children. You both had a sort of wild, bohemian, or almost enchanted look about you. Oh, I hope you don't think me rude." "No, that's exactly it. Diana was enchanted. She was a free spirit. That's why I had to come back to set her free into the woods again. I've got to protect the trees. It's what I was born to do. Does that make any sense?"
"Perfect sense. You know, if I were 50 years younger, I'd be shinning up those trees with you. So would half the village come to that."
"Oh, mind you, never could stand heights."
"Me neither."
"But Leo..."
"I know. Ironic, isn't it?"
Aware suddenly of the relaxed intimacy between them, Lady Hillier stood up stiffly.
"Now then, that tea."
"Anyway," said Leo, "we'll know the fate of the woods today, won't we? I wonder what time we'll hear."
Leo felt cleansed by his tears. Far from embarrassing him, it had actually comforted him to connect with his past in this unexpected encounter. Presently, he rolled out the garden hosepipe from the tap outside the kitchen door, pulling it down to the gate in the wall near the camp. He planned to fill their large water containers. That should see them through the day at least. Suddenly, a triumphant "Yes!" rang out across the woods. He looked up to see Spider racing towards him, waving his mobile phone in the air and grinning from ear to ear.
"No need for that now, mate. Looks like we can move on."
Leo hauled himself up into his treehouse for the last time. He took a moment to consciously thank the magnificent being by placing his palms on the bark and willing a healing blessing to pass between them. And then he made himself look down. He could feel Diana's presence deep inside him. Then it was as if she leapt away from him, down onto the ground below, where she ran, a wild spirit, through the woods. He was dizzy for a split second, and then he felt enormously free and light-headed. He knew that he was not afraid any more. Diana had gone, but she'd left him her gift of courage. A week later, Leo dropped Lady Hillier a postcard. "Thank you for helping me free Diana. I hope you will look out for her in the woods sometimes. She especially loved the huge oak by the cornfield. It was the only one she never managed to climb. It used to drive her crazy."
Peter McQueen was reading The Treehouse by Noel Gadala. The producer was Sue Wilson.